Well, you wake up in the morning. You hear the work bell ring. And I march you to the table. See the same old thing, yeah. Ain't no food up on the table. There's no fork up in the pan. But you better not complain, boy. You get in trouble with the man, yeah. Let the midnight special shine a light on me. Let the midnight special shine a light on me. Let the midnight special shine a light on me. Let the midnight special shine a ever-loving light on me. Yonder comes Rosa.
Oh, yes, indeed. You should know that voice. That's the voice of the great Stanley Durrell Jr. I just said to throw that, to throw you off. Better known as Buckwheat Zydeco. He sang in French Creole and English. And that's one of his big tunes, The Midnight Special. It's from his 1992 album, On Track. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it is Free Your Mind Friday. What are you going to free your mind of today? Considering where we are as a nation, the developments that we are coping with and reacting to. So this is the choice you have today. You can comment on the stories we have been following all week, or you can present something of your own. And let's see where it takes us. The main thing is that it should free our minds. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. 888-874-4888. Let's start off with Jay from New York. Hello, Jay. You're on the air.
Hello, Eutrice. How are you doing? Happy New Year if I haven't spoken to you before this.
Yes, you have. You have.
Okay.
Happy New Year again.
That's beautiful. And to the listening audience also.
Thank you.
You know, Eutrice, it's really sad what's going on with this immoral, lying individual that's the head of this country. It's tragic to see that the majority of those who are suffering at this time because of the shutdown are individuals who have voted for this man, who are, I would say, the reason why he's in office. And what's even more sadder than this is that a lot of them still support this man. Now if you see he's trying to change the narrative by saying that he didn't say Mexico was going to pay for the wall, because his assertion now is that with this new trade deal with Mexico, it will pay for the wall tenfold over. And that if the so-called Congress doesn't pass it, then this is just another reason. That's absolutely what one would call fake lose and flip something. And the American people is buying it up. The thing also that annoys me so much is that the media doesn't put him on blast for this hypocritical behavior. It seems as though they don't even know what direction to go in to deal with this crisis in this country and how they should be presenting it to the public. So it doesn't look like this is going to end no time soon, because basically if it does end on behalf of the psychopath in office, then his status in the country, he believes, will be absolutely shattered. So whereby now he's going to play a game that they call who's going to blink first. I don't know if the Democratic Party, who controls the Congress right now, is going to blink. I don't know if the Republicans who control the Senate are going to blink and just say to McConnell, let's take this to vote and we're going to just pass this to help these so-called American citizens in this crisis. But it really just goes to show you how these individuals just don't care about everyday people. Because the one agency that concerns me the most is the FDA. That's an agency right there that could cause so much harm to the American people by being shut down at this time. And it just seems like they don't give a damn. And that's the tragedy.
It's not that they don't give a damn. The agencies, you can't blame the agencies. They are federal agencies under the jurisdiction of the president and his administration. So if, as we have seen, if the directive is that there's going to be a shutdown, and just as Trump pretty much said, don't expect a paycheck, but do expect to work without pay, and then other services are being severely curtailed. The FDA, as you pointed out, is one. The U.S. Department of Agriculture is another. There are all kinds of federal agencies that are linked to the daily lives of many people who are in very precarious positions. And it will just go on. But it tells you something about the president and his administration, where they're willing, I mean, just punish people, just take dead aim at them and shoot them so that they have, out of fear, out of just sheer, a sheer will to survive, they would likely not move against the president, but stay loyal or just shut up and put up with this kind of thing. But I get a sense, there seems to be some indication that the labor unions, the unions who should have been on this case from day one, from minute one, after the announcement of the partial shutdown, there seems to be some kind of a building of resistance here, and we'll see how it goes. But
so
I think you're right.
Do you think they're the only ones that, do you think that the unions are the only ones that can move the argument forward for the American people?
No, you see, here's the thing, and it's a dicey situation. The unions really have no business in directing policy, I mean, national policy on security in these matters. Where they do have a way of affecting this is via their contracts and labor law, and that's what they have to do. This move by the president and his administration is entirely illegal, And they have to fight on those grounds. They can't be seen or pretend to be seen as setting national security policy. That's not their place. This is a labor issue. It's not a national security issue. It's a labor issue involving billions of dollars of taxpayer money. And these are the sectors that have to be activated with regard to the issue at hand, not
Well,
other. We
Gitrice,
can't look. Yeah.
let me just ask you this one last thing. What do you think will happen if he deems that it seems like he's not going to be able to win this argument, a national emergency, and this thing goes into court? Do you think that he'll open up the government while this is litigating in the court? Because that may be the only way that he could come out of this and save face and just wait for the courts to make the decision, which I believe the courts will side with the Congress.
People
I
say
really
that,
believe they will
but you
side
know,
with.
here's the thing. The thing is that there has to be huge resistance. It's not yet evident.
Right.
It's not yet evident. And it's really not up to the courts or up to anybody else except the constituencies that are affected.
But why is
They
that?
have to take a lead on this, and without,
Why do
we're
you
not going to
think
move
there's not an
anywhere.
uprising? Why do you think there's not an uprising going on in not only in the street, just basically in society as a whole? Because like you say, it doesn't seem like the public is really up in arms over this. I don't know, is it because it just affects a small group of people or that we're just working too hard to
800,000
survive?
people is not a small group of people.
To the American
800,000
people, it is.
workers is not a small group of people.
To the American people, it is.
Okay, well,
It
then
is to the
they
American
just have
people.
to deal with what comes to them with that kind of thinking. That is backward thinking. 800,000 people is larger than the population of many small countries. It's not a small group of people affected, and it will grow.
Yeah,
It will grow in number.
the American people, I guess, don't see it that way. Me and you understand it to be what it is, but on the whole, the American people don't see it that way. I mean, to be honest with you, it seems like the American people are having such a struggle surviving, in all honesty, in this country, that they're just so happy that they're not part of this equation at this time. So they're not even
I don't
showing
think
the
that they're
type of capacity.
contented. I don't agree that the American people are contented. I think something is at work here. And what is at work here is the absence of effective leadership. People
That's
have to be given pointers as to what is it that we ought to be doing in these times, and let's get to it and
Have
do
a
it.
good one.
We're entering into the fourth week, and we don't see that kind of momentum. Perhaps we are being unrealistic because it involves not only 800,000 workers, but it involves organization and planning. So that might take some time. But in the meantime, we're not seeing the civic element. You know, the just regular people organizing themselves in support of 800,000 workers. That is compelling to me. Thanks for getting us started today. Thank you so much. John from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Patrice.
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Okay, how are you doing, John?
I'm hanging in there like everyone else.
Yeah, it's the best thing to do, at least to hang in.
Thank God my nails are long, you know. I got a question for you. The question is, besides Abraham Lincoln and this some questions about him as well. But besides Abraham Lincoln, who were the two greatest Republican presidents?
I don't ever think of anything like that. I don't ever think of anything like that, because the yardstick by which I would measure greatness, most people would not be inclined to measure greatness that way.
I might measure greatness in a similar fashion. But my thinking on that is the two greatest Republican presidents, if you look at the legislation that they either started or continued, would be Bill Clinton and Barack Obama. Those are the two greatest Republican presidents of all time. And that's really all I have to say.
You said about Republican presidents?
Beg your pardon?
Those are the two that you would cite as the greatest Republican presidents, did you say?
Yes, you look at the legislation that they passed. Barack Obama, he just continued the wars. He just continued all of the Bush administration, all of the Bush things that were put through. And Bill Clinton is the absolute, he's like a Democrat in Republican clothing. They're both Republicans at heart.
I suggest very strongly for our own sanity and survival that we get out of this trap of Democrats versus Republicans. Because the more you look into that dynamic, the more you see that there's hardly any difference between the two.
A bingo.
And we're arguing the wrong thing. Why should we be talking about who's the greatest president? From what point of view?
If you are
speaking as a member of an oppressed group, that question should be out of bounds almost permanently. Because the way you see the world and the way you have to see the world means you don't talk about these kinds of questions. They're not even relevant. You would be talking about presidents and presidencies with respect to the aggregate progress of people of the class in which you belong. Now, for some people who come into the world in working class, families and so forth, they'll have one point of view about who is the greatest. For people who come into the world as members of the elite group, they'll have an entirely different view. There's no one way to answer that question. That's what I'm saying. So we obsess over things that are really not, in the end, very germane to what we ought to be understanding about politics and presidents and presidencies. Are you there?
I'm here. I just think you sounded like a politician. Sorry to say that, but that's what you sounded like. I mean, to me, it's quite... Well,
it's a very serious answer, actually.
Who sent more black people to prison than any other president?
I don't measure people that way. I don't measure a president that way.
Oh, I do, big time. I do, big time. Absolutely. I measure people by what they do and what they're responsible for having allowed to happen. And as far as I'm concerned, the two greatest Republican, looking at the issues and looking at the legislation and the laws that they shepherded through Congress or whatever the hell, this bullshit that we have
wait a minute now. Let's watch our language here.
I got carried away there. The bull dung, okay, bull dung. Let's call it bull dung. That we have for a government which we all know should be a three-party system, but they won't even talk about it. It's like not being able to talk about religion and not being able to talk about politics during Thanks Takeaway, because I don't call it Thanksgiving. I call it Thanks Takeaway. You know, we take away everything that
they
have.
You're going all over. You're traveling all over the landscape today, so it's hard to pin you down on where exactly your argument lies.
My argument is a simple one. You look at, as I said, you look at what they were responsible for as far as our government is concerned. I mean, it's no doubt in my mind that that Bill Clinton and George W. Bush caused the Great Depression of 2000, and he saw to it that more people of color went to prison than anyone else. He took away all of the S-chips, all of the things that Democrats tried to put through our government to help keep poor people who were being kept down, who were being, indiscriminately imprisoned. And Barack Obama just followed through. He just followed through. He just did the same thing. And, you know, he kept the prison open. He had a hit list. He had, the prison, when I say that, I mean Guantanamo. It's just so obvious. I don't know why people don't realize this.
Interpret history very differently from you. You have one view of history. Other people have another view of history. For myself, the question that you're asking to me is not relevant.
Because we
get into the business of measuring the faults of individual presidents, and you get nowhere with that. And
really?
Beyond
it's all
that,
about measuring.
You're talking about just recent history. If I, you know, as a, if I were asked the question about the greatest presidents, I will have to go all the way back to the days of slavery. You see, I wouldn't start at a contemporary time, because it pales in comparison to anything that came before that. I will have to go all the way back to the beginning. And we don't have that much time. Thanks a lot, though, for calling in and offering these thoughts today. Thank you so much.
Everyone
from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, Willie, you're on the air.
Oh, my dear, beautiful, and wonderful, our shining star. How are you?
I'm okay, Willie. How you doing?
I just hope you're feeling better. Listen, I'm not as articulate as Sister Patricia or Brother Harvey. I'm none of that. But I know one thing that you've done. You've raised me and people like Minister Farrakhan and all those has raised me from the grave. So, because I know I was a dead person. And that's what you and Brother Gary is doing right now today. And most of the people in PRN. But let me ask you this. What do you think? We all do a lot of evil to one another. Of all the evil that we could do to one human being could do to another, what do you think it is? Hello?
Oh, yes. Oh, I thought you were going to tell us what you asked me. What is the greatest evil that we do to each other? Is that the question?
Yes.
Oh, Lord, there are so many things that tie.
I'm not saying that there aren't many, because there are many. But of all of them, what do you think is the worst of them all?
Well, I'll venture to offer an answer to the question, but I don't know that it would mean very much. The worst thing that we do to each other is, I think, the inhumanity that we exercise against each other. The inhumanity. I think that would be the worst thing.
Okay. Well, before I give you my answer, on your shoulders I stand. On Gary's shoulder, I stand. And most of the people in PRN, I stand on your shoulders. Dr. Ben, all of these people, your shoulders I stand on. All of these people. Now, I think, and it boggles my mind to know that on your shoulder I stand, and I'm questioning you now. I think the worst of all evils that one human being could do another is to take their mind. Because once you take somebody's mind, you could do whatever you want. You could destroy the humanity, anything you want to do. You could do. And that is, in my judgment, what has happened to the American people. Because, look, you elected that, whatever you call a president. You elected him. We all, you pointed out that the errors in our ways of electing him, and we went ahead and elected him, and then we knew he was out of his mind. Then we turned around and looked to him for sane leadership. Now, who is really insane? I'm asking you.
Well, yes, I did raise that interesting quagmire.
No, but
I don't want you to say we elected him. We didn't. A segment of America did elect him, that's for sure. But he was not overwhelmingly elected president of the United States. There were still quite a few people who resisted and quite a few people who opted out of the process altogether. But you have a strong point there. And more so with this president than perhaps others, only because I think he's so crass. That's the way he operates. He wants you to know that he is doing everything he can to make your life miserable, to make America great again. And we understand what that means. That he, by necessity, has situated himself as a kind of a bully and a thug, not a president. But there's a certain segment of America that likes that, that wants that, that will support that.
But we live in a global community. And for you to think that you could bully torment and terrorize everybody on this planet. Somebody has taken your mind. Somebody has to. So, but I'm not blaming the American people. I'm blaming those who have done this. That's the people that I'm concerned about. I have no concern about what he does or says. There was a time in my life when I used to pay so much attention to that kind of stuff. I have no interest in it. Why? Because they're going to do it. They're going to do what they want to do. The question is, what are we, the people of goodwill and good heart, are doing? That is the question.
And that is the question. That is the question.
I'm more disappointed with PRN listeners than with Donald Trump. It's very simple. Many times that we've heard our family, they get on and the people's got to wake up. Wait a second. That's the silliest thing I've ever heard. You see, look, if you and I are going to the airport and you're sleeping, I have to wake you up because we have a plane to catch. If your wife is sleeping, wake her up. Hey, look, what are you doing? We're going to catch a plane. It's the same thing. So we have been blessed to have someone like Gary, to have someone like you, and the entire people in PRN, because I don't listen to anything else. You know what I'm saying? as far as entertainment. Now, think about what we do. We are paying these people to lie to us. That simply means they have no respect for us. And we're giving them money. What if we should send, just like we're paying cable bills and all that kind of foolishness, that should be our money going to PRN and waking other people up. Because, listen, I think you and quite a few people, Minister Farrakhan, a lot of people, I know most a lot of us do not like him, but I'm saying, examine what he says. The reason why a lot of people are telling you, you don't want to hear, he's this, say all you want, but they have never said he's a liar. So is Gary, so are you. And that's why we listen to you. If anybody should mention to you, not to listen to anybody, that person is insulting you or you don't know. Because what they're saying, you don't have a mind of your own. Everybody needs to be listened to. And then you make that decision. You make that decision whether that person is worth listening to. You see what I'm saying? Now, look, if we were doing our part of the work as far as just wake up the people around you. On the plantation, some of them you can't wake them up. Some, they see you, they get upset, but you keep beating them over. You keep beating them over their head. Eventually, you have cell phones. There are certain programs I send it to everybody in my contact. Some of them I download because this is what I have to listen to. Because I can't see myself watching television. It's an insult to me. Because we know that these people are lying to us and deceiving us. And we still continue to entertain it and pay them. What kind of sense does that make?
Your point is well taken. And okay, it essentially boils down to this. Support those things that support you. That's the basic message here.
Yes,
support
right.
the media outlets that support you. Support any organization that supports you. But
right,
don't just lay back and leave it to other people to step into the breach. You know, even though it is a nonprofit organization, it takes money to run PRN.
Yes.
So
yes,
we need people to step up to the plate. In fact, I would consider it one of the pillars of what we should be professing in our daily lives. We should support
programs
and organizations that support us. Thanks for reminding us that's our duty to keep things going.
Utrecht?
Yes.
My biggest worry now is that they will come after you guys. Because every time...
Of course.
What?
Of course, it's understood.
The truth is a no-no.
We're doing the kind of work that we do, which necessitates putting these other folks under the microscope, and which it necessitates educating people about ways in which they themselves can become leaders in their own communities. These are not desirable goals for any organ, for any administration. They will try to snuff you out. All the more reason that we do need the defense. One of our defense systems would be ardent support from listeners that will give us the protection we need to continue going on. Thank you so much for that message today, Willie. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Love you.
Love you too. Thank you. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air. We didn't get to you yesterday.
Yes. I had to leave. I had an appointment. I've been listening to this discussion, wonderful discussion from the members of the seminar. And what comes to my mind is that there's a takeaway message here. And that takeaway message is the people who run the American government are not interested in the what is good for the masses of people. This whole operation called the United States of America is geared toward enriching the people at the top, especially the corporations and the wealthiest people. And that should be a takeaway message. I've been thinking about it, and I think that one way that we could shed some light on this is to do a study on those people, for example, sitting in the Congress, and see where their so-called campaign contributions, which really are bribes, who are the people, people that support them, how much are they getting in terms of these campaign contributions, and what is their connection in terms of, with, let's say, their family and wealth and income, and how it's connected to the lobbyists and the people who provide honorariums to them for various things, and everybody who is involved in Congress, that information should be freely available. And it's usually not. The media is not going to put that stuff out. But this should be readily available. In other words, what I'm saying is those in power are serving the corporations and the people at the top. The rest of the people, if this was a real democracy, you wouldn't have half the population being poor. People wouldn't decide, well, we want to be poor. So what I'm saying is that all these elections, and Gary puts it very well, he says they select and the people select. The people elect. You see, and that, there's a lot of truth to that. And so we really don't have a system of political parties. We have a one-party state, just broken up into two divisions with the same goals. That is to enrich the few at the expense of the many. And that's where we got to get across our heads that this is not a real democracy. And I would call it a faux democracy, because the things that the government is interested in and spends money on things that will enrich the corporations, help the corporations all around the world, control the smaller countries, and that's going on all the time with sanctions, with countries that don't fall into line, and various other pressures. So we're dealing with an empire. And we are dealing with an empire that is reaching out all over the world, deciding that it wants enemies so it can give the excuse for having $1 trillion worth of so-called defense expenditures, which are really war expenditures for things we don't need. At the same time, people are hungry, homeless, and suffering at least half the population. So my takeaway message is that the government has set up does not serve the interests of the people. And talking about which is which president is better than the other and all that, that to me is no different than talking about, which slave master is a better one, or which prison warden do you like better, warden A or warden B? You know, this is nonsense. The whole place exists to benefit the few at the expense of the many.
Absolutely. We could always depend on you for just bringing it home logically to us. Let's hope people understood what you just offered. Thank you, David, for calling in today.
Thank
Harvey
you.
From Berkeley. You're on the air.
Hello. Hello. Hello, wonderful Eutrice.
Hey, wonderful Harvey. What's going on in your neck of the woods?
Well, as far as Trump is concerned, you're absolutely right in saying that this man is not the right person to serve as president of the United States of America. Excuse me. He's what I call a man-child, and in all appearances, what we see is a fully grown, physically mature person. But it's more than obvious that after 2 years in office, we're really dealing with a petulant child. And for those who don't know what petulant means, it's defined as a person who's impatient, childish, grumpy, complaining, bad-tempered, moody, irritable, and self-centered. And he has proven over and over again that he disrespects our beloved Mother Earth, as well as us, her offspring. And there's an old saying that a lot of people who are abused when they were young go on to abuse others, and President Trump is the poster child of this unfortunate truth. For example, even though there's an overwhelming amount of scientific proof that our out-of-control use of fossil fuels like coal, oil, methane, and the more than dangerous nuclear power are baking our home planet, especially after the United Nations said that last year was the fourth hottest year on record, the terrible tantrum-throwing Trump continues to ignore these facts. And President Trump has repeatedly said that he doesn't believe in climate change and that we should dig up and burn even more coal, increase fracking for oil, methane offshore, especially in offshore coastal waters, as well as around pristine Arctic areas. And we all know that fracking for oil and gas causes earthquakes, which is the last thing that we here in California want or need. And if that's not bad enough, fracking also poisons our country's freshwater aquifers. So what do we do about the petulant man-child who occupies the Oval Office? And the answer is that we, the people, must show responsibility by taking on the mantle of leadership by parenting America towards a renewable energy future. We need to divest from the fossil fuel industry and reinvest our money in solar, wind, tidal, geothermal power, as well as buying electric vehicles and harvesting electrons from solid-state piezoelectric, that's pressure to electricity, thermoelectric, which means heat to electricity, and triboelectric, which is static electricity harvesting technologies. And with our runaway weather catastrophes bearing down on us, it's time to focus our collective energy on slowing climate destabilization, because where's the profit in a burnt-out planet?
Well, all right. That's a question. I can't answer it. I have no answer about where there is a profit or burnt-out planet. Let me ask you.
Yes.
Do you see the issue of climate change becoming more and more central to the way governments, even at local levels, if not at the federal level, but they're beginning to understand the things that, for example, that you are talking about all the time?
Yes, I think they do, because I can refer to here in California, the wildfires, the death and destruction that's gone on, billions of dollars, like PG&E, Pacific Gas and Electric Company, they're only worth about $10 billion. They have assets worth about $10 billion, but the liabilities are $30 billion, and this company's been around 100 years, but due to the climate destabilization, suddenly they're facing bankruptcy, and who knows, and they're talking of selling off a lot of their holdings. I mean, it's affecting America. The insurance companies are just devastated by the payouts that they're facing. They're starting to hand all the liability over to governments. It's making a big difference, and I think that as climate change is going to accelerate, and it's only death and destruction that will bring us to this attention. It's just going to play havoc with our government. And Bush the other day, I mean not Bush, but Trump said that he's not going to send federal dollars to help fight California wildfires anymore, even though he's pushing the use of coal and oil and all these things that heat up the atmosphere that cause bigger and bigger weather catastrophes. So we're reaching a tipping point here, and it seems that because our government is once again a wholly owned subsidiary of the oil companies, we the people have to use our tax dollars to make the right investments so as to slow climate change and save ourselves and our children and future generations.
Well, I can say amen. Amen to that. Thank you for calling in and contributing today.
Thank you.
E from Edgewater, you're on the air.
Hello, Yatrice. Good afternoon.
Hello. Thank you. Good afternoon to you.
Thank you. I just wanted to thank you for all the great guests and informative shows that you've had on for the last 2 years, at least, for us to enjoy. They've been very informative and helpful to all of us.
Thank you.
Well, in the words of the great Joe Cocker, in the song that he sang, it's a sad, sad, sad situation. Great Joe Cocker, who sang a song he covered, it's a sad, sad, sad situation when sorry seems to be the hardest word. It was a great song that he covered then. And that's the way I feel about things. I'm wondering if Hillary was right with this deplorable stuff. Maybe she meant gullible. We're the gullibles. I don't know about deplorable, but definitely gullibles. To believe this nonsense that's going on is real. And I don't think we've had a president since John F. Kennedy was murdered. It's just been either dictators or puppet dictators. Dictators were Johnson, Nixon, the Bushes, Clinton, and the puppets were Carter, especially Reagan and Obama, and now Trump. They're just puppet dictators. They've been appointed and put in there to carry out these methods and programs designed by this system. And it's all by design. Slavery was never ended. And for the last 2,000 years, we've all been under this slave rule. And we've just been gullible to think that we've had freedom. And we're just being manipulated from every side, from every angle. There's no Democrat, Republican. There's one system, and it's designed to bring us down. And, you know, we're very gullible to think that we have this power to go to vote and change things when they don't pay any attention. They just want us to think that we can go to vote and we're going to make some kind of a change. When are we going to wake up? For the last 50 years, we've been saying the same stuff.
I agree, and I understand exactly what you're saying. However, on the other side of the fence, you have to really appreciate the power of the state in conditioning people's minds. Most people have some kind of intelligence. They think. They're not encouraged to think for themselves analytically. But this system has as one of its major tools in its arsenal is the control of the mind. That is what Willie was talking about earlier today.
Exactly.
You underestimate that. You really do. And it will take time for people to get it. You have to keep moving, you know, on that theme. But we also can't just say, well, what's wrong with the people? I ask that question all the time. What's wrong with the people? But we have to also take into consideration what the people have been subjected to by a rather sophisticated system that knows how to control the mind. because in controlling the mind, you control the behavior of an entire nation. You can control what they are likely to do, how they are likely to think. In the current situation, I think you will agree, it is unbelievable that a president can take this action against 800,000 workers and the country still remains normal. That tells you the power of the component of controlling our lives. And he does it with a compliant media. They're not about to raise any hackles. They don't want trouble, many of them. Some are still, thank goodness, following the old directives of the profession, which is to ask questions. But so much has gone on in the way of reshaping the way we think. And we don't give the system the credit, if I could use that word, for developing a system that produces predictable results. And what you're talking about are the predictable results that the system produces. We have become predictable. And if we study systems, we can see how logical it is, how natural it is. When a system is designed to take a hold of your mind, to twist it and turn it any way it wants, to make you think night is day and day is night. This is perhaps one of the greatest developments in the United States after Nazi Germany. How do you control an entire nation? You constantly change people's notions of the reality that they actually are living in. You know, how do you get 800,000 people to accept they don't have a paycheck? And worse, they are prohibited from seeking employment elsewhere.
Right.
There
is no employment. There is no employment, and that's part of this immigration thing. There's no more jobs for people to do here. So the only job people are getting is they join the military. That's become the biggest plantation in the world, joining the military. It's the only job in town. People, instead, they don't have money to go to college, and even if they did, they're going to get into debt with student loans. And then after going to college for 2 or 4 years, they come out of college and there's no jobs. They got to work at McDonald's. So rather than do that, they join the military, where they're brainwashed into this nationalist, so-called, is the patriotic thing to do. Well, I'm in the service now. I got a uniform. They give me a gun. What do? When they want to get rid of someone, they create a war somewhere. And the reason why the budget of the military is so big is they got to pay to all these people that are in the military a salary. That's where all the money's going. There's no jobs here because Gwen said there's no manufacturing done here anymore. That's not true. It's done by machinery and computers and robots. So we have been taken over by technology, and now our only choice is to join the service if you're not one of the rich. The rich kids, the children of the rich, sons and daughters of the rich, they have jobs when they come out of college because they can afford to go to the best colleges and have all the best things, and they get led right into good jobs. All the journalist stuff, that's all new rich kids. Cuomo's son's in there now, Vanderbilt's son, Anderson Cooper, Chris Cuomo, Chris Wallace. They're all the big journalists now. They tell everybody what's going on, and they're just making up lies and stories, and it's all part of the system, and it's all part of this design to keep our minds controlled and to keep us dumbed down.
They all are not doing that. Let's be fair. They're not all doing that. They're not all doing propaganda work. Too many of them are. But you still have a few.
Yeah, the ones that aren't are making like they're the opposite side, but it's just like Democrat and Republican. They just create this conflict to make us think there's a conflict when they're really on the same side, and it's all just being gibberish, being led into our heads. We're hypnotized by the cell phone and technology and all these things, and we're not paying attention to how we're being controlled and how we're being taken over and how we're being put down.
But at the same time, I am going to try to encourage you not to see it so one-sidedly. There are still pockets of resistance, and what we have to do is to get to know who and what they are and where they are, and to support them, to support the good work that they're doing. It's not all, you know, lost. There are still pockets of resistance, and we should seek them out, and we should support them. Thank you so much, E from Edgewater, for your contribution today. And that brings us to the end of our program. We, of course, are entering the wonderful weekend. My main goal is to sleep. And I wish the same for you. By that I mean relax. Relax. It's one of the best antidotes to what is planned. You have a relaxed mind. You can think. You take time for yourself to just bring the stress factors down. And we'll see each other on Monday. Bye-bye.
There's no fuck up in the pan.